Your patients were the expulsion recommendations for student A, student B, and student C. Would someone like to make a motion for each of those? I believe we should do those individually. So would someone like to make a motion on student A?
I'll move that we accept the stipulated expulsion for student A.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second for the acceptance of the stipulated expulsion on student A. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 7-0. Student B, would someone like to make a motion on that, please?
I'll move approval of the stipulated expulsion for student B.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second for the stipulated expulsion on student B. Is there any discussion from the board? Anybody out there that would like to talk about this? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 7-0. Student C, please.
I'll move the stipulated expulsion for student C.
Okay, we have a motion for that.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mr. Quesenberry and a second by Mrs. Sheffer for student C. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address us on this item? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Is there any board member that would like to discuss this? And seeing none, we'll bring it back for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 7-0. Let's move on to item number 4.03, which is approval of the minutes. Would someone like to make a motion on that? This would be the minutes for the meeting of October 2nd.
I'll move approval of the minutes of October 2nd as written.
Okay, we have a motion for that.
I'll second.
Second by Mr. Quesenberry. Is there anybody from the public that would like to speak to this item? And seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for discussion. Is there anybody from the board that has more? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back for vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 7-0. And let's move on. Boy, we're just getting through this. To student representatives to the board. And so we have Nicole Dirks from Pacific Beach. Welcome, Nicole. And before you start, let me tell you how we work it. What you'll do is you'll be able to give your presentation, and then as a student board representative, you're welcome to stay for the meeting if you like. You're welcome to participate in any of the discussions that we have tonight. Obviously, you can't vote, but we do welcome hearing from you. However, we also know that a lot of times there are things that you have to do after you're done with your presentation. So if you need to leave, we'll understand that as well. Great. So you want to go ahead, Nicole? Thanks.
Okay. Is this working?
Yeah.
All right, cool. My name is Nicole Dirks, and I'm here representing Pacific Beach High. And we just finished our first marking period at Pacific Beach. More than half our students earn 9 credits or better. Our goal for the year is 80%, so we have some work to do. We have met our attendance goal with an average of 85% of students attending every single day. Our other goal is to have 100% of eligible seniors graduate, and we have 2 seniors already completed their graduation requirements. In order to better meet our school-wide goals, we have a new schedule this year which allows students to get extra support in the afternoon, such as tutoring. We are currently in the first phases of putting together a Rotary Interact Club. History benchmarks were given, and 88% of students scored proficient and above in United States history, and 80% scored proficient and above in world history. The art students participated in E Modern Art in September down in San Luis Obispo, downtown. This is a old picture of it. Yeah. Pacific Beach is excited for this year's mock trial, and we are glad Mr. Miller is one of our attorney coaches. That's it, really. Huh? Mock trial? Oh, yeah. That's just about it. That's all.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Nicole. We'll move on to public comment. The board allows 3 minutes per comment. I think we have two people who have indicated a wish to speak tonight. So, Mark?
Yes, we have Donna Cabrina, who would like to talk to us about Teach School.
We have a visual aid. Good evening. My name is Edona Cabrina, and it's nice to see parents from Teach and the board this evening, learners and contributors to a diverse global community. The school's philosophy and direction are in accordance with the district's striving to achieve, which was up there a second ago, success for all. We have been made aware about the impact Teach has on Bishop Peak's campus, as both schools have grown in population over the years. With Teach having a lottery for the first time, it is apparent the demand far exceeds the supply. Perhaps moving campuses is necessary. As parents continue to submit letters on solutions and prepare for the October 30th meetings at 1:30 and 6 p.m. held by our principal, Dan Block, it is important to share with the board that we as parents are here present and want to be a part of the process to continue to see Teach thrive as a school, whether it be moving to another campus and perhaps as an additionally larger middle school type of campus. And this is just a little quote as I was updating myself on our district website. There's a lot of reading on there, everybody, that would benefit us all. Research shows that successful schools provide rigorous academic coursework, relevant learning opportunities, and meaningful relationships with teachers who are highly qualified to engage students in the learning process and achieve at high levels. As many of you know, but I would like to just reiterate, San Luis City Unified School District's mission is to educate students to become self-sufficient individuals who are capable of making significant contributions to society and managing change in the culturally diverse world community. The district guarantees to provide the highest quality programs. All of these steps require some time. And I know in the end, when all the process that we go through, it would be up to the superintendent along with the board to look at the cost, look at the programming. How does that play a role in the decisions that lie ahead?
Great. Thank you.
So as these steps require time, in the long run, I'm trusting that together it will be really worth it. Thank you again for your support, time, and I hope, like all of us here, your passion will continue to be shown for our Teach School. Thank you.
Thank you. And on behalf of the board, we do want to congratulate Teach School with this great honor as becoming a Blue Ribbon School. I think it's actually our third Blue Ribbon School in San Luis Coastal. Morro Bay High School was a Blue Ribbon School, and Monarch Grove was also a Blue Ribbon School. So I think if we look at our district, it's a great legacy, and congratulations to everybody, the students especially, for the hard work that they did, and then the teachers and Mr. Block for coordinating that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mark?
Yes. Our next speaker is Charles Nickerson, and he would also talk about Teach.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the school board, Dr. Prater, my fellow attendees. I have to apologize. We should have had maybe a little bit more collaboration, but I have a feeling that I'm going to be very redundant in what has just been said. With that, I'm going to go ahead and continue. My name is Charles Nickerson, and I'm a parent of a student of Charles E. Teach Elementary and a former educator who served in your district as well as in Paso Robles, Lucia Mar, and Atascadero Unified School Districts as an elementary school teacher. Along with the parents who stand here with me tonight, we would like to congratulate the school board, Superintendent Dr. Prater, and Teach Elementary in particular for the academic success in which has been risen to national recognition. As you know, Teach has just received the National Blue Ribbon Award issued by the U.S. Department of Education, being one of 23 schools statewide to receive the award, and only one school here in San Luis Obispo County School District to receive this award. Furthermore, the continued support of the administration and school board truly exemplifies the need for a place where students can flourish and grow. We hope that accolades as these can serve as an indicator to others the truly special nature of this school. We are thankful that our children have been the recipients of Teach's educational excellence. The Teach School community shares a commitment to provide rich, varied learning communities for all students to grow intellectually, socially, emotionally, and creatively. Our vision and purpose is to empower our students to become lifelong learners and contributors in an ever-changing, diverse, global community. The school's philosophy and direction, which has led to its present state of academic excellence, is in accordance with the district's striving to achieve success for all students and our school district's mission statement. With that being said, we have recently been made aware of the impact Teach has had on the Bishop's Peak campus, as both schools have grown in population in recent years. It has become evident that the impacted nature of the campus, which is shared by Bishop's Peak Elementary, has initiated spirited dialogue about seeking possible solutions to address the issue. It might be premature to discuss these solutions with you this evening, so we've come before you tonight to show our support to the school board and the decisions that lie ahead of us in our strong desire to be a part of that process, which is to follow over the coming weeks. As vested and committed
on to item number 6.01, and the board did receive two pieces of correspondence, one from Bree and Jim Newman, also addressing Teach School, and then we received a letter from Ms. Marie Ocampo Arroyo regarding the proposed transfer of sixth grade students to Los Osos Middle School. So thank you very much to everybody for writing to us. We now move on to item number 7.01, the state budget update. Mr. Miller.
Thank you, Mr. President. Not a whole lot happening on the legislative front right now. Obviously, the elections have taken front and center in most politicians' lives at the time. And one of the aspects that affects us as a school district, education in general throughout the states, the Proposition 30 and Proposition 38. And their most recent polling has shown a decline in support for both propositions. 38 never really had a majority, but 30 was above 50% throughout the process until very recently, and in some polls it's polling at 47% at this point. Needless to say, all of the things that you read about it and understand about it, if Proposition 30 fails, then the governor's commitment is to cut billions of dollars from the educational budget, which will translate to $457 per student for all districts, including ours. And we actually will end up taking a double hit in the sense that we have our fair share of pain that has been visited upon revenue limit districts, and we have to give back categorical money to the tune of $4.5 million. The $457 will be an additional $3.2 million. So we are looking after the election in November of an additional $3.2 million, adding to the deficit of the district, which is currently $4 million. So should the polls prove to be accurate, the outcome is going to be devastating.
Thank you, and I just want to remind everybody here tonight and everybody who might be watching us on television that absentee ballots and permanent absentee ballots have gone out in San Luis Obispo County. They went out last week. We know the election is coming up soon in November. We encourage everybody to take advantage of your right to a franchise and make sure that you vote. And I'd advise everybody to look strongly at all of the propositions and consider all the arguments and the impacts that the propositions might or might not have on schools. Thank you. Dr. Prater, would you like to talk about item number 7.02, please?
That's the Cayucas piece, right? Okay, I'll take that one, President Unger. The County Committee on Territory Transfer met last week, the 10th of October, for the final meeting to decide on the issue and determine whether or not they would allow the petition to go forward to allow a vote on the feeder pattern for Cayuga students leaving eighth grade and where they would end up going to high school. We didn't know when we placed the item on the agenda, we weren't sure of what that outcome would be. In fact, there was an 11th hour, truly 11th hour, education code finding that played a part in that decision. I have to admit I feel a little foolish for never having seen this ed code section myself, because I actually like to read the Ed Code, believe it or not, but I did not see this section, and I don't think anyone saw it coming. But section 35756.5 is a specific piece of the Ed Code that's written for small districts. Those are school districts that serve less than 900 students. And what it basically says in layman's terms is that if a governing board in any territory adjustment issue is against that, then that district must be included in the vote. And plus, a majority of that district and the overall majority, and at least this is the interpretation of that Ed Code, would have to concur in order for a transfer to take place. So what was explained at that committee meeting was that in this example, the Coast School District in Cambria, because they have less than 900 students and their governing board would be against this transfer and has come out against this transfer decision, that they would have to be included in the vote. Furthermore, the interpretation of the law or the Ed Code would be that they would, in fact, also have kind of trumping value over any other majority vote if, in fact, the citizens in Cambria voted against the territory transfer. That seemed to weigh on the committee, and they voted to decide not to pursue a vote. In some of the comments, their decision had much to do with cost, that the cost of an election, the figures of $80,000 to $90,000 were thrown out as the cost of an election. I won't editorialize too much, but we know that election costs vary widely.
Mm-hmm.
That was not in the report that was issued, mm-hmm. but that was something that the I believe a board member and other people in the Coast District brought up that they saw a racial imbalance occurring if this was to go through.
Isn't it also true that they approve every transfer that comes to us?
The county committee is different from the county board.
Not the county committee. I mean that Coast Union. That Coast.
I don't know which ones they don't approve because we don't see those.
I see.
We only see the ones they approve to come to our school district. So I'm not positive on that.
Okay, thank you. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? And I know we have a couple of people that would.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Ron Wilson, we are first.
Hi, I'm Ron Wilson. I'm a school board member in Cayucas, but I'm here not representing the board, but trying to represent the families and children of Cayucas and their goals to attend Morro Bay High School. As Rick told you, it was a crazy meeting to have a Ed Code thrown in at the 11th hour, truly the 11th hour, and actually that'll be one of the basis for our appeal. We've only put in a notice to appeal. We have another 2 weeks or a little less to get the appeal in, but it's very important to get the evidentiary materials down, and we'll be communicating with you so we can be on the same page about that. The appeals are supposed to be only about procedural matters, and there are quite a few of those. The first being that something was thrown in at the last minute without proper notification, without the public or your board being able to look at the restrictions based on that and come to understand it and have a strategy to present at the time. Also, there was no public comment for that, which violates the rules. So those are procedural matters. Also, there are other ones like in the Ed Code. I'm getting pretty good at this, but I have to read the numbers still. 35705, there's a part about public hearings and notices, which that would fall under in a way. But also, they were supposed to put in the report very specific about basically the amounts of revenue limits spent per student, and just compare a before and after for both districts. And they had lots of financial information in there, but they didn't do that, and that's called for specifically, which those of you who attended any of the meetings knew I kept trying to explain that, why they're not a poor district, they won't be suffering to the extent they claim. Closing schools and all is not going to happen, no matter, you know, if the transfer took place. Part of this is the area of election, which again goes back to the code that Rick quoted there, and just to let you know that the board, in a funny way, the committee said we support the petition by not denying the petition, because the first thing was to, somebody asked for the petition to be denied. They decided that no, we will not deny it. So you would think that meant they approved it, but no, there's another vote taken for approval, and that's when the was revealed about the something that nobody seemed to know about before that meeting. Their conclusion there was twofold, that they seemed to interpret it that Cambria got a veto out of this, and the way it was stated was not the district but Cambria. So the conclusion was that Cambria, for the petition to succeed, you'd have to have 50% plus one person in Cambria vote. And the idea was, well, that's not attainable. There's no way you're going to convince them to vote against their own interest, which kind of goes counter why we have elections, you know. But that will be part of our appeal. But that was a misinterpretation. It's the entire district. Could I have another minute?
Is the board okay with him finishing up?
I have about one more minute.
Yeah, please go ahead.
That they had a veto. That's not true. It was the entire district would vote, and we could probably get 85% easily in Cayucas. We did it with a bond issue, and this won't cost them any money, so we can do that. That would mean we would only need 33% of the good people of Cambria to realize that this was the right thing to do. That's not unattainable. The other was on the cost, quoted $90,000. Well, if this provision takes place, unfortunately, San Luis Coastal voting does not help or hinder, but it costs. So if you take that off, and I've talked to Judy Rodenwall, that it would only cost $10,000. So why not have the election to see this? So they missed on these situations. They decide that it's the people's children and people's tax dollars who get to vote, which would mean just Cayucas. So there's a very good opportunity to do this. So anyway, thank you very much for your time. It's a complicated issue, and I'm getting to know this, so if you did have any questions, I'd be happy to try and answer them. So.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay.
Mrs. Ross.
Hi, I'm Gretchen Ross, the chief petitioner, and I did file my notice of appeal yesterday. I just wanted to stress that Code Section 3575.6.5 can be waived, but it cannot be the petitioners who request the waiver on it. It has to be either the County Board of Education that does that or your board. And I believe, I'm not exactly clear if in order to do that you need to appeal the decision as well. So that is something I want to throw out to your board, and I would urge you, your board, to look at appealing the decision. I think that there are grounds, procedural grounds, that weren't met that you could appeal this decision to deny the petition on. You have 30 days from the day that the decision was made, so the 10th plus, that makes it, I believe, November 9th. So, and I believe you have another board meeting before that. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Ross. Mr. Robinette, do you have anything else to add? Is there any board member who'd like to comment on this? Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. Or, you know, before we do, is there anybody else from the public that would like to address us on this issue? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
Mr. Robinette, to whom would the board appeal? Is it to the same committee?
No. Ed code waivers are appealed to the Department of Education. So any waiver of Ed code goes directly to the Department of Ed.
Mr. Robinette, at the meeting, or with our understanding of this rabbit out of the hat Ed code, according to Mrs. Ross, right now there was an opportunity to appeal this. Is the sense that appeal would have been at this meeting of the vote? Is that
no? Once that county committee makes their decision on whether to allow a vote or not allow a vote, there's a very small timeline. I think it's 5 days for any party to grant an appeal. If a board of education is involved in any in a matter, I think they have a 30-day limit. So if our board, the Cambria board, the Cayucas board, if any of if those groups wanted to act, that's a 30-day window. But the petitioner herself has a 5-day limit to do that. But it's not back to this committee. It's to the Department of Ed.
So the appeal could not have been made at the county. At the county meeting.
No, it's for the Department of Ed now to decide on the appeal.
Well, I arrived at the meeting and first found out about this Ed Code section by whispered rumors in the hall while the meeting's going on. I thought it was an ambush, frankly. I was really disappointed in the role of the County Office of Education and County Office of Education's Council, and it was a clear sentiment expressed by members of the county committee after they were told about this Ed Code section, which I am still yet convinced is applicable in the way they say it is. But it basically convinced a number of the committee members that it would be a fool's errand to hold this election. So, you know, I don't blame them for their vote. I just think that they were misled and misinformed. And I think it affected the fundamental fairness and due process of this committee hearing. I don't know whether we have standing to appeal a denial of a petition by the Cayucas group, but I certainly encourage the administration, at least as one board member, to cooperate and support the efforts of the Cayucas parents in any way that we can.
Dr. Prater, I don't see anybody else from the board that would like to talk about this. Do you have any comments? And if the board has an interest in supporting something like that, would that be something we would do at this point, at advanced agenda, or at the next meeting? What are you thinking in terms of a timeline on that?
Well, I'd like an opportunity to vet this a little bit more. This is the first I heard of this idea of appealing. And before I would make that recommendation to you, I would need to really think it through and work with counsel on one hand. On the other hand, I think we have time. I think we could agendize this at the next meeting to more fully inform the board as to what the options are and what that could look like. And you know, I was there at the final meeting as well, and you know, I think the losers in this whole outcome are the families of.
Okay, Dr. Prater, so you have your marching orders, and
yes, I do.
Okay, Marilyn.
I definitely would like it brought back. I'm just wondering I'd like to understand or make sure that I understand the time frame. The allowable time frame for appeal. Were we to choose to appeal, our next board meeting is
you can just yell, Mrs. Holmes.
Your next board meeting is November 6th, but you do have a study session next Tuesday that we have not yet prepared the agenda for if you wanted to direct a change and have an action item.
Okay, so November 6th probably doesn't allow enough time for processing of paperwork and what have you if we wanted to do that. So is there enough time for investigation between now and the study session?
Gretchen, you know what? You probably need to come up here.
Yeah, I think it's just...
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
I can do an email.
It takes 15 minutes to write one sentence of a notice of appeal. It didn't take me very long at all to write that. So the 6th to the, I believe it is the 10th of, or the 9th, so.
For the notice or for the full appeal?
The notice of appeal has to be filed within 30 days. Do you have Chapter 11 with you, Ron? Isn't this sad? We know which chapter. Okay. Is there enough time?
Russell, go ahead.
Mr. President, perhaps it would be best if staff worked with them and got the timelines out and then communicated them back to the board when we have a chance to get it all organized. One of my primary concerns is that I want an answer for is where's Cayucas' board stand in all of this?
Right. I think
before
that was a question
we go out and take a position on it, what does Cayucas' board as an organization have to say in support? If the petitioners can't waive or ask for the waiver, why can't the board ask for the waiver?
Because It sounds funny, but as I understand it, we don't have standing. The children have left our jurisdiction, and they've moved on. Now, we get to vote on how we have certain controls of when. In the past, we've had controls about how that movement took place. But now, our board doesn't really have a dog in the fight, except the children. But legally, it's you do, because you are the high, you were the target where for the funding and for the children. Coast Union has them now, so you are the ones. That's the way we understand it.
Perhaps, yeah. But it sounds more like the other side of the coin to me. But I think that we need to have this conversation in a more organized fashion.
I think that's what the board's desire is to
thank you.
To have you guys, pardon me, pursue this, do the research on it, and then I guess the only question for the board is, will you have enough time to bring it back for the study session? And my concern is, will that divert from the work we have to do at the study session, or do we have enough time if we bring it back on November 6th?
And
so that would be something.
And that was my question: is do we need to talk about it at the study session? Does that give you enough time to do your legwork, or if we wait until November, have we missed a deadline?
We'll find out. Okay. I think, you know, if our instruction to staff is to research this and pursue it, we can also include that they take all steps necessary to preserve our appellate rights, and then they can come back to us for ratification after the fact. I don't think we need to get in a big time bind over this. If it's the board's consensus, then staff should take whatever steps are necessary to preserve the rights. I'm also not sure I accept the fact that once the children leave, because it is actually the petitioner asking for your district's property to be changed into another district. So I would really be suspicious of somebody telling you don't have standing. I could see him telling us we don't have standing.
I have researched this because that would seem the natural course of things, but...
Okay, well, that's good. That would be a good thing to take up with staff. Okay. So if that's, Chris, if that's acceptable to the board, that we have the staff take that action.
Okay, so, Walter, would you just summarize what your proposal is so that the board can understand that and we can, I don't think we're taking a vote, but we can act on consensus. So could you just do that, go through that again for us, please?
That the board instructs staff to pursue cooperation with the petitioner and the Cayuga School District to perfect whatever appellate rights there are, and to take steps that are necessary in order to preserve any appellate rights of the school, of our school district.
Okay. Is everybody, we got consensus on that from our board members? Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you
very much. Let's move on then to item number 7.
And so you're going to receive three things tonight. In this presentation, the first thing you're going to receive is the first student achievement report based on the 2011-2012 data. The second piece will be me presenting the state of the district. And then the third component will be from the words in the videos of the principals, the SB, the single plans for student achievement updates. So we're trying to pull all those three together. The intention is not to spend a lot of time on the single school plans like we have in the past, but rather to accept this as a synthesized presentation. So with that, I'd like to acknowledge the Instructional Services Department for Learning and Achievement. The team has been remarkable, and I'd like to introduce Dr. Delkiskamp.
And Mrs. Shields. Our work last year was guided by the collaborative continuous improvement process, and we are beginning our year once again with collecting data, analyzing it, and planning and implementing our action steps. We begin our presentation by showing some of the data we've collected. In terms of demographics, you can see that our overall district enrollment has increased. However, when we look at specific student populations, you see that they are growing at an even faster rate. with our socioeconomically disadvantaged student group growing 24% over the past 4 years.
So let's take a closer look at that fastest growing student group, which represents 36% of our student population in San Luis Coastal. What do we know about our socioeconomically disadvantaged students? We know that our families in poverty represent all ethnicities. About a third of the students are English learners. All of our schools have students attending who live in poverty, ranging as low as 13% to as high as 64% of the total school population. Research studies repeatedly show that socioeconomic status is among the strongest predictors of academic success. Research has also clearly identified instructional strategies, targeted programs, interventions, and exemplary models that ensure students from families in poverty accelerate their learning and achievement. All Means All is the message behind Initiative 1, closing the achievement gap with all of our struggling students, including those from low-income families. Here are some highlights of how we are addressing student needs using research-based exemplary programs.
So now let's hear from our principals about what it means to them to support all of our students.
All Means All means that we know every student in our school, we know their circumstances, we know their achievement levels, and we know what we need to do to get them to be proficient.
This All Means All has to do with celebrating the unique successes of every child and building a community in which every person participates, adults and children, and is respected and contributes to the whole.
In an effort to reach all students at Pacheco Elementary, one of the things we started last year was a preschool, and it went fabulously.
All Means All. Students, teachers, parents, all community, and in adult ed that means everyone, 0 to 100.
That everyone has equal access to the curriculum and equal access to wonderful teachers, and that we're all going to learn together.
That we need to find the need and the desire in all students that come to us, even the most reluctant students that come to our school, to ensure their best chance for graduation and success.
We are working collaboratively as a school community, teachers, classified staff, principal, instructional coaches, searching for answers that are going to affect every kid.
That we're looking at the needs of all of the students, both how do we support them if they're in need of intervention, and how do we support them if they're accelerating. It also means that we look at the needs of all of our families, and how do we support the different needs of families on our campus, as well as the needs of all of our staff.
Success for all at Sinsheimer really means taking a look at every student in the school and making sure that their potential is being realized.
That each kid is known for their unique abilities and their needs, and that we're able to provide support for them, each and every one of them, so that they're successful and they move on to Morro Bay High School.
That all students are connected, supported, and learning in spite of the challenges they may face individually, which means that we have to know all of our students individually.
Have a look at our students' performance on the 2011-12 state assessments. The STAR California Standards test that students in grades 2nd through 11th grade take each spring, fondly known as the CSTs, the California High School Exit Exam, the CAESE, that all 10th grade students take each March, and the California English Language Development test, also known as the CELT, that English learners take each year to measure their progress in learning English. Let's begin by taking a look at the STAR CST data. This first slide shows a summary of our students' performance on the STAR CSTs in English Language Arts. This chart will provide a four-year analysis of results for all students and for several of our specific student populations. The data shows the overall percent of students in our district scoring proficient or advanced. As you will notice, our district has quite a bit to celebrate this year in our progress in English Language Arts. When we look at all of our students, we see that 70% have scored proficient or advanced, up a couple of percentage points from the previous year. Now let's take a look at our specific student groups. Our white student group performance has remained steady in the high 70s. Our socioeconomically disadvantaged student group went from 44% proficient or advanced to 51%, a seven percentage point gain in 1 year. Our Hispanic student group also grew by 7 percentage points to 48% proficient or advanced. Our English learner group grew by 5 percentage points to 28% proficient or advanced. And our students with disabilities grew by 3 percentage points to 32% proficient or advanced. When analyzing CST data for trends, we consider significant changes in the performance of our students when we see a 5 or more percentage point increase from 1 year to the next, or when we see consistent upward growth across time. Across the board in English language arts, we see growth in the performance of our students. In many cases, the growth is significant and reflects the highest percent proficient or advanced levels ever experienced in our district. You can see our progress in the upward trend of the four lower lines. What this graph also represents is that there exists an achievement gap between groups of students. It is represented by the distance between the blue line, our all students line, and the lines of several of our specific student populations. Our focused efforts in Initiative 1 as part of Success for All are making a difference, as evidenced in the upward trend of this graph. We see our 2012 data points heading toward each other in an upward trend. If we take our current results and project a moderate rate of growth based on our last 2 years' performance and extend it across the next few years, the dotted line represents a trajectory where we can see that it is possible to make significant progress in further closing the achievement gap for our specific populations. But clearly, it is not enough. And even more intensive effort is required to close the achievement gap, especially for our English learners and students with disabilities. This next slide provides another look at the achievement gap. In the previous slide, our SED population percent proficient or advance compared to our all students group showed a difference of about 20 percentage points. 70% proficient compared to 51%. But another comparison can be made to compare the performance of our SED group to the performance of their counterpart, the non-SED group. And in making this comparison, we realized that the actual achievement gap may be closer to a 30 percentage point difference, 51%, as compared to 81% proficient or advanced. Our efforts with the Success for All initiatives to improve classroom instruction and provide needed intervention are instrumental in addressing our goal of closing the achievement gap for all students.
On the mathematics CST, our district posted the highest scores in 4 years for all students, our white students, our socioeconomically disadvantaged students, Hispanic, EL, and students with disabilities. While we did experience some growth in mathematics in 2011-12, we did not see the significant growth with our student groups as we did in English language arts. Here, we can also see there is less of an achievement gap than in ELA, however, and calculus. It is also evident that our students who are one grade level below in math in eighth grade continue to struggle in mathematics throughout high school. Students who are taking math courses that are two and three grade levels below have difficulty demonstrating proficiency on the CST. Looking at our students' performance on science CSTs, our district has experienced growth in fifth grade. Scores at the secondary level have remained steady, with slightly more than 7 out of 10 students scoring proficient or advanced. Looking to the future, we know these results reveal a need for additional focus on science, given the next generation science standards being adopted within the next year.
Moving on to the California High School Exit Exam, we see that the majority of students pass the CAISY, English Language Arts, on their first try in 10th grade. We do see that our English language learners and students with disabilities are not passing at the same rate as all students on their first try. This may be due, in part, to the writing component. Students must pass the CAISY in order to meet high school graduation requirements. However, schools and districts are held to a higher standard of proficiency. Digging deeper, we see that the gap between our student groups is even greater when looking at the percent of students that score proficient. These students will need additional support in English language arts in order to become college and career ready. In mathematics, we again see the majority of students pass the CAISY on their first try. We also see greater achievement in our student groups. However, we still see a gap in proficiency in mathematics, although not as great of a degree as English language arts. All of our English learners take the California English Language Development Test. Students are tested in the domains of listening, speaking, reading, and writing. Results are given according to their level of English proficiency: beginning, early intermediate, intermediate, early advanced, or advanced. When looking at these results split by elementary, middle school, and high school, we know that about one-third of our elementary and middle school students fall in the beginning or early intermediate levels. Intermediate makes up the bulk of elementary and middle school students. Given that the English language proficiency levels of around 70% of our elementary and middle school students is intermediate or below, we know that a focus on early literacy is important. Shifting our attention to high school, over 60% of our high school English learners fall in the early advanced or advanced levels. We want to ensure that this group of students has access to rigorous upper-level coursework. The state assessment results from CST, CAISY, and CELT provide a basis for three measures of state and federal accountability: our annual measurable achievement objectives, or AMAOs, our academic performance index, or API, and our adequate yearly progress, or AYP. The annual measurable achievement objectives use CELT data that we just looked at to determine the progress of our English learners. AMAO 1 measures the percentage of English learners making annual progress by moving forward a level on the CELT test. For example, scoring beginning last year and early intermediate or above this year. Historically, we have scored well above the federal target and demonstrated significant progress in 2011-12. The dip that you see in 9-10 was experienced statewide on the CELT. AMAO 2 measures the percentage of English learners who have attained English proficiency. Starting in 2009-10, AMAO 2 was divided into two cohorts: English learners who have been in language instruction educational programs for less than 5 years, and greater than or equal to 5 years. Our results for English learners less than 5 years are above but parallel to the federal target. Our results for ELs with greater than or equal to 5 years of language instruction are accelerating at a rate beyond the federal target. We need to remember that all English learners will need greater access to rigor in order to accelerate their achievement in attaining English language proficiency.
Our Academic Performance Index, or API, is a state accountability indicator designed to measure the academic performance and growth of our district, schools, and the API for our English learner population increased by 21 points to 698. The API for our students with disabilities decreased slightly. In a few minutes, we'll take a look at the API growth of our individual schools.
But first, let's take a look at our district adequate yearly progress, a federal accountability measure based on a set of academic performance goals and targets for districts and schools. There are four requirements that schools and districts must meet in order to make AYP. The first is a 95% participation rate in state testing. The second is a percent proficient target in English language arts and in mathematics. The third is making API growth, or being above 800. And the fourth is a graduation rate at our high schools of at least 90%. This chart shows our progress towards meeting the English language arts targets. Our all student group grew to 72% proficient. Our white group exceeded 80% proficient. Our SED group has grown 10 percentage points over the past 3 years. Our EL group experienced a significant increase from 33% to 39% in 1 year. And our SWD group remained in the low 40s at 42%. Meanwhile, the AYP target is increasing each year by about 11 percentage points, with it at 78% for last year's testing, rising to 89% next year, and then to 100% in the 2013-14 school year, as defined by NCLB. As you can see from this graph, the blue line shows the target increasing over the last 4 years. Only our white population this year met the 78% proficient target this year. However, many of our specific groups within the district and at many of our schools met AYP criteria through Safe Harbor, which means that although a group of students may not have met the 78% proficient target, significant progress was made in moving students to proficiency. At the district level in English language arts, we met AYP criteria through Safe Harbor by making significant progress district-wide and with our SED, EL, and Hispanic populations. And that's something to celebrate. In mathematics, our all-student group was 70% proficient this year. Our white group inched towards the 80% mark at 77.5% proficient. Our SED group was up 5 percentage points to 53% proficient. Our Hispanic group was up 5 percentage points to 51% proficient. Our English learner group grew 6 percentage points to 45% proficient. And our SWD group grew to 42% proficient. And again, despite the target in mathematics at 78%, at the district level, we met AYP criteria district-wide through Safe Harbor for all students, our SED, EL, Hispanic, and white student populations, again, by demonstrating significant progress in moving students to proficiency. And in summary, we have a lot to celebrate in our accountability measures this year in San Luis Coastal. This chart might look familiar to you. It's a modified version of the chart that you received in your board packet. Let me share some exciting highlights with you. Our district and 11 of our schools experienced growth in API this year. 8 of our schools experienced API growth in the double digits. Most notably, 2 of our Title I schools, Smith with a 37-point gain and Del Mar with a 33-point gain. 3 of our schools have APIs over 900, Bishop's Peak, Los Ranchos, and Teach, with 4 more, Sinsheimer, Monarch Grove, Laguna Middle School, and our dual immersion school, Pacheco, all above 850. 6 schools made AYP this year by meeting all of their criteria. Bishop's Peak, Los Ranchos, Sinsheimer, Teach, Pacific Beach High School, and 1 of our Title I schools, Hawthorne. 4 additional schools were very close to making AYP, missing it by 3 or less criteria. Del Mar, Monarch Grove, Los Osos Middle School, and Morro Bay High School. I think it's evident that our data indicates that we are on the right track.
Works on initiative two, but we need to continue to strive to meet the needs of our school community.
Initiative three, we develop preschool and transitional kindergarten programs for eligible students, as well as provided educational programs for their families. We need to continue to assess the need and develop plans for future programs out at the coast. Initiative four, our multi-year focus on English language arts, professional development, and authentic assessment has produced positive results across the grade levels. We must continue to increase that rigor of classroom instruction at all grade levels to prepare our students for the shift to the Common Core.
Our formalized multi-year mathematics plan guided our work on Initiative 5 to implement our first round of professional development, intervention, and assessment, with much more to come. Although we earned our lowest grade on Initiative 6, we were thoughtful in our research and invested our time in approaches such as STEAM and project-based learning that could in the future be duplicated and provide accelerated and specialized learning opportunities for all of our students.
On Initiative 7, our staff engaged in the administration and analysis of new assessments aligned with the California Common Core state standards. As we fully transition to those standards, our student assessment practices will need to align with not only what we are teaching, but how we are asking students to demonstrate deeper levels of understanding. Creating that classroom of the future. Every school last year identified and received instructional technology tools to enhance student learning, as well as ongoing professional development support. We still need to really examine our goals and expectations as we continue on a more rigorous path to transform technology in our district.
We earned high marks on Initiative 9 by honoring the work of our district employees and establishing a strong foundation for continued collaborative relationships. And because we never stop working, we gave you an updated page for Initiative 10. We didn't have some data available last week, but we got it this week and provided that for you. Our work on Initiative 10 centered on establishing new data points as well as reviewing our college and career programs in preparation for the revision of our district's career technical education plan that will combine both the academic and technical objectives inherent in the new CTE standards.
We have lots to celebrate from 2011-2012, and we'd like you to hear from our principals who are celebrating as well the many successes from their school site's progress on our district initiatives.
One of the things we are really excited about is we've been able to hire extraordinary new teachers that have brought a new vitality and have really motivated all of us.
Our attendance dropped from 46% to 30%, and our API score went up 37 points.
We had a number of course offerings to support our students who struggle in reading and in math. We also offered our first ever intercession for students who struggle, and we feel we had tremendous success with that.
So when we look at individual student groups and individual students that received the attention of their classroom teachers and our specialists and our programs that were aimed to raise their reading and math skills, those students one by one showed growth.
I know at Sinsheimer last year, the staff really worked hard at early literacy intervention, and that's a celebration that we have this year.
We saw an increase in our API by 33 points. We really put a strong focus on mathematics, and that really showed throughout our school, as well as comprehensive literacy.
That our students had over 80% proficiency in mathematics on the CST, and even more so, 93% of our 6th graders and 87% of our 5th graders were proficient. We had a really good-sized graduation class, and we look at improving upon that this next year.
One of the things that we're really excited about is how we've grown our ELAC community. We have regular meetings now with 150 to 200 parents in attendance.
I'm noticing that our FIT students need support, and we've provided them with PPI counselors. We're very proud of the amount of counseling support we have for our kids. Getting access to our EL students have iPads in their classroom.
Last year we worked really hard to support our students in guided reading and to increase our implementation of LLI.
We did have every child have an extra person helping them, every child that needed it. Fantastic implementation of comprehensive literacy, which really ups the reading ability of every child.
We were accredited for 6 years. Fantastic. We had an API growth of 6 points. We're now at 830. And we're especially proud of the connections we made.
Showed increased student achievement. 8 out of our 15 schools in San Luis Coastal increased their API by double digits. Particular outliers who have been highlighted tonight, it's worth mentioning, who have increased by 20 or more points, were Del Mar Elementary at 33 points. Hawthorne Elementary, 23 points, and it should be noted that Hawthorne met all of their AYP targets. C.L. Smith, 37 points. And Los Osos Middle School, 20 points. Each of those schools represent our highest levels of disadvantaged students. Those are the students in our district, in large measure, that struggle with poverty on a daily basis, and they're making it work. Our English learners and our socioeconomically disadvantaged students demonstrated the highest academic gains of all population groups in our district. More students were in their seats learning, as evidenced by lower truancy rates, chronic absenteeism, and an increase in average daily attendance. As we noted earlier, Teach Elementary School was just acknowledged this week as a National Blue Ribbon School. We opened 3 new preschool programs in San Luis Obispo with plans for a new program in Los Osos in 13-14. We kicked off a highly successful summer writing institute attended by over 160 teachers and administrators in this district. It was a week-long institute run and facilitated by Kathy Zotovich. We created 10 classroom technology pilots, classrooms of the future technology pilots, across the district this year. We implemented a new multi-year mathematics plan for San Luis Coastal. As you see in the data, it's desperately needed. And I believe this plan is exactly what will help us achieve our goals. We approved a new teacher evaluation tool in collaboration with SLCTA, along with an agreement across all our employee groups last year in terms of collective bargaining. We added top quality employees to San Luis Coastal, from cafeteria and transportation directors to principals, deans, to instructional coaches, to classroom teachers and support staff. These are only a few of the reasons to celebrate if you are part of San Luis Coastal Unified School District. So I'd like to take a moment and talk about the dedicated educators that make this happen. I can stand up here and speak to you, but let's get real. Where it's happening is on the floor of the classroom. And I want to mention that. We are a school district that is clearly and positively impacting the lives of our students. At the core of this success are the dedicated educators who have committed to the belief that all means all. The school board's unwavering support of the strategic plan initiatives demonstrates a powerful vision for the commitment to the success of every child in our school district. This cannot be understated. It is because of these initiatives, the focus, and the resources to back it up that came from you and the support from you that has guided this achievement. It could not have happened without you, and I'm honored to work with you. So now let's talk for a moment about the challenges. By the way, that gentleman, one of the gentlemen climbing up that steep mountain is Mr. Delkus Camp, one of our PE teachers, who I might add recently broke his arm. But that's not the point of that. But this, in many ways, is what we're up against.
So let's not fool ourselves. We must acknowledge the enormous undertaking represented in the strategic plan initiatives. I stand in amazement at how much ground we covered in 2 short years. Let there be no mistake, however, that we are far from our destination. Every employee in our school district is carrying a heavy load and is feeling the burden of the tasks they have been given. As superintendent, I want to publicly acknowledge this real and tangible impact on our employees. The natural inclination for most of us, certainly including myself, who choose education as a profession, is to fix the problem and to reduce the stress, pressure, and conflicts that arise in our work. We're fixers. I actually propose a course that is counterintuitive, that we keep moving forward with our stated goals and not lose our momentum and not lose our focus. With this, however, I humbly submit that we modify our pace and find creative ways to reduce the stress on our staff, vital aspects of our effort to reach all the students. What's at the core of what we're doing? In other words, where should we place our focus in an environment of shrinking resources? So focus, focus, focus. These are the things I believe we must do well in order to achieve our objectives. The number one thing we must pay attention to and do well is focus on high quality instruction. I believe supporting this effort are the three things that we've been doing as a district. You're putting your money where it will make a difference. And that is, we've collaboratively developed, I believe, a rich, robust teacher evaluation tool that improves the conversation around instructional practices. The second piece is we've invested in instructional coaches at all of our sites. These are master teachers helping their colleagues, their peers, in that dialogue around high-quality instruction. And then I cannot leave this out, the professional training. If you could only see, I urge you to attend the professional trainings that are going on. They're incredible. They're absolutely incredible. High-caliber professional training that's going right back into the classroom. The second piece I believe we must focus on is literacy and expression. Supporting this effort are the following things that I believe we're doing already, but we can't lose our focus on. Comprehensive literacy. That's how we teach reading in our classrooms, in our general ed classrooms. Writer's Workshop, the efforts of Kathy Zotovich and the Summer Writing Institute. Learning how to write well and express yourself well is a life skill. It's so important to build confidence in expression. Level literacy intervention, that's the piece that allows kids who are falling behind to get them at their level and build them up. Of course, we can't forget about reading recovery. The amount of students, if you looked at the data, that we are teaching specifically targeting that early literacy in reading recovery, over half of those students are that target population where the achievement gap exists. And then, of course, preschool. It's that early intervention. Our preschool model is unique. Our preschool model is targeting the kids that are not going to attend preschool. They're planning on going to kindergarten for their first schooling experience. We're actively going out into our communities and saying, come to us. We know the importance of this is absolutely imperative to closing the gap. Number 3, innovative practices. This is an important piece for all of us. The supporting efforts I believe will lead to this is to continue to focus on high caliber mathematics instruction. We need to continue developing our STEAM model. I believe it's that STEAM model that's the trick to offer kids that rich, innovative learning environment that I think will build on it. Virtual access, I believe technology as a tool to level the playing field is a must in our community. especially those who don't have the access. Career pathways and A through G requirements on this are critical because this needs to be our centralized focus of access. We must ensure access to all kids into A through G and to pursuing career pathways and the skills that go with it. The fourth piece is fiscal stewardship. And the supporting efforts here are the first component is to align resources to maximize the funding on 1 through 3. I believe that it's 1 through 3 that's going to get us where we need to go. And then, as we all heard in the grand jury report, and I actually think it's important to recognize that, is that we must align our expenditures to our resources, to our revenues. And then finally, for those of you that attended the Jamie Vollmer presentation, what I pulled from his message is this: we have to engage in the conversation. We have to do two specific things. We have to improve communication practices with our staff and our community, and we have to improve community-wide understanding regarding the importance of the work we're trying to do. Without it, we can't get where we need to go. Thank you.
For the final part of our presentation, we move to the planning and implementation phases of our collaborative continuous improvement process. Our principals have once again
in all of our classrooms.
Really developing a system that ensures that every student who needs very specific targeted intervention support receives that specific support.
We'll continue to use our intervention model where we're working to meet the individual needs of our students, to do our pre- and post-tests, which guides the instruction of our teachers.
We have two new SDC classes. There's a new teacher evaluation system. We're working on writer's workshops.
Across the school, we're implementing Daily 5 in CAFE, which is part of our literacy program, and it's a great complement to the comprehensive literacy training that staff have had already.
We're focusing on assessment, teachers using assessments, and also students' self-assessment to help motivate learning, to help engage them in the process of learning and see where they are and where they're going.
Getting a sharper focus on our student data and looking at that data regularly, specifically in the area of literacy. We're working to strengthen our guided reading groups, kindergarten through sixth grade, as well as our literacy intervention.
So we've adopted the Character Counts program this year for a strategic way to build character amongst our kids.
To take a look at the Common Core standards and start looking at the curriculum that we're doing and how we can have kids explore and think deeply and really extend the learning that they've been doing in the past and continuing our focus on comprehensive literacy.
Working with different groups in the community, the nonprofit groups and other government agencies, to help serve and support children 0 to 5.
We want to see students thinking, really doing some higher level thinking and moving along so that they can become problem solvers and independent thinkers in all subject areas.
Our principals shared quite a few noteworthy themes for their school focus in addressing the initiatives for this year. As we look forward, access to high levels of rigor needs to be the norm for all of our students at all of our schools. Our teacher evaluation tool will help us place a high priority on best practices classroom instruction. Ongoing professional development will build teacher capacity with the support of instructional coaching to ensure high levels of implementation.
The principle of relevance applies to both the students and the adults in our district. In terms of our educational organization, relevance really involves a systems change. I'd like to share a brief excerpt from the book Schools Cannot Do It Alone, because the author, Jamie Vollmer, eloquently explains the meaning of a systems change. He writes, America's schools were not designed to teach all children to high levels. They were designed to select and sort young people into two groups, a small handful of thinkers and a great mass of doers. But America has changed. No one knows with certainty where the economy is headed, but it is abundantly clear that low-skill, high-wage jobs are gone. For over 200 years, to succeed as a people, we needed to teach only a small fraction of America's children to high levels. And we could and would continue with this ruse today were it not for the demise of the industrial age. We now need to unfold the full potential of every child. Our prosperity, our security, and our social tranquility now depend, as never before, upon our ability to help all children acquire the knowledge and skills they need to thrive in a global society. In practical terms, this means that we need to forge ahead with our implementation of the Common Core State Standards, providing problem-solving opportunities for our students in mathematics and in writing, and implementing an integrated approach to instruction that includes, among other elements, technology and project-based learning. A focus on relevance requires us all to engage in skills necessary to thrive in that global society: critical thinking, creativity, communication, and collaboration.
And our last R is relationships. Relationships characterized by the collaboration with our own.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. We'll go to see if there is there anybody from the public that would like to address us on this item. And seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board for board comments or discussion. Is there anybody from the board that would like to weigh in on this? Well,
the quality of the use of the data was so easily understood and comprehensible, and well laid out and beautifully done. But you know, and most importantly, I want to congratulate also the teachers and the principals and the people in the classroom who are helping our students achieve these amazing results. And our thanks go to all of you. At some point, I'd like to have a further opportunity to investigate what specific things we are doing for our students with our disadvantaged students. It seems like a very gnarly problem because so much of their day they spend outside of our influence. And if only we could lengthen that school day and capture more of their time. But that is, I'm sure, part of the problem is they do not go home to the environment, and sometimes they don't go home to a home at all. To a meal, to a parent to help them with their homework. And so those are the challenges that we face, and that's a pretty difficult problem for a school board to solve and for a school district to solve. But perhaps at some point we could have an opportunity to delve into that, like what are some of the things that are being done or that we could invent to be done. But thank you all.
Thanks. I want to say when we came up with the initiatives, and we rolled out some numbers, there were a lot of people that said, oh my God. And we said, they're doable. And I just want to echo what Catherine said. I want to thank the administration. I want to thank the principals. I want to thank the teachers. I want to thank the parents. And I'll tell you what, most of all, I want to thank the kids, because they're the ones that ultimately got us here. And the amount of talk there was about whether we could reach these goals was there was a lot of it out there, and we're doing it, And I just can't believe it. I just can't thank staff enough. One of the things that I'm looking at as I look at this is that among the other districts in this county, we have had the best growth in our Latino students, both in the county and in the state. And those are the kind of numbers that really indicate to me that we are starting to close this achievement gap. So I'm happy that we set those high numbers.
Okay. Well, this is good news indeed, and I think I've said this before. I think we have really gotten ourselves on the path from a good school district moving toward a great school district, and I'm proud to say that I'm affiliated with this group of people, and thanks to everybody that has worked, including, as our board has pointed out, our staff, our students, and our communities. So thank you to everyone. Let's move on then to item number 8.01, which is a determination of sufficient textbooks and instructional materials. And I believe that this is a resolution. This is resolution 4-12-13. And Dr. Delkiskamp and Mrs. Shields, I believe you're presenting this.
Yes, we're asking tonight for the board to approve this resolution. As noted in the item, we had identified areas of insufficiency by the public hearing. We're just about complete in our requirement, and I'm happy to say that all of our students have the instructional materials that they need.
Great. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Mr. Buckman?
If I can just make a brief statement, and Rita can help me with this. While this resolution, at least to me, if I'm wrong, please correct me, says that we have a sufficient number of textbooks, one of the things that I'd like to ask is, we had a textbook adoption cycle, and I'd like to know how far behind we are in that adoption, in the adoption cycle, because of the state cuts.
Right. The last materials that we were able to adopt district-wide were in mathematics, and we were due to adopt in English language arts, but with the state budget and our own budgets, not only our district, but various districts had to put a hold on that, so it's been probably at least 11 years since we adopted a new English language.
Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Would someone like to make a motion on this resolution?
I move adoption of resolution 0412-13, determination of sufficient textbooks and instructional materials.
Motion by Mr. Millar and second by Mr. Quesenberry. Any further discussion? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for vote. Ms. Holmes?
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mr. Quesenberry?
Aye.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Aye.
Mr. Buckman?
Aye.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Passes unanimously.
Okay, let's move on to item number 9.01, approval of kindergarten through 12th grade single plans for student achievement. I know we talked a little bit about that. This would be, again, Mrs. Delkiskamp and Mrs. Shields.
Well, principal shared highlights through the video earlier with you. Each school's goals were attached to your board item that you received hopefully last week.
And we amended one of the pages also. It's been uploaded. It was the last page again because we were able to get our UCCSU information that wasn't available last week. And so we've updated those charts to include that information for both Morro Bay High School and San Luis Obispo High School.
Okay. Would anybody from the public like to address the board on this item? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Is there board discussion or comments?
Is there any reason for us to have this brought back again? Bless you.
I don't think so. We can make this an action item if the board so chooses.
I would move approval of the plans, K-12 single plan for student achievements.
Okay. Is there a second on that?
Second.
Mr. Quisenberry seconds. Mr. Millar made the motion. Is there any further discussion from board members? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 7-0. Let's move on to our action consent agenda. Let me know if you'd like something pulled. Item number 10.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. And that, who pulled that? Jim? Mr. Quismer? Okay. Item number 10.02, acceptance of donations. 10.03, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 10.04, approval of purchase orders. 10.05, approval of California High School exit exam waivers for students with disabilities. And 10.06, claim against the district. Justy Brasul, senior, filed on September 18th, 2012. Would somebody like, well, is there anybody from the public that would like to speak on any item for the consent agenda? And seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Would someone like to make a motion for 10.02 to 10.06?
I'll move that we adopt items 10.02 through 10.06 of the consent agenda.
Okay.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer and a second by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. Is there any further discussion from the board? Seeing none, I'll bring it back for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Carries 7-0. Mr. Quisenberry asks for 10.01.
Just a question that Ryan Pinker could address, but maybe someone here knows. Have we replaced the choral teacher at San Luis High?
Not yet. I believe those interviews are taking place this week.
Thank you.
Okay. Would you like to make a motion?
I move approval of item 10.1, approval of certificated classified personnel items.
Okay. Is there a second on that? I'll go ahead and second that. So motion by Mr. Quisenberry, and I seconded that. Is there any comment from the public? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. No, looks like no further discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 7-0. Let's move on to item number 11.03, advanced agenda. I know we already have one advanced agenda item, which would be a request for action on the Cayucas transfer. Is there anybody else that would like to make a recommendation for an advanced agenda item?
If it would please the chair, I'd like to talk about two. I'm not sure the wording here is perfect, but I would like to explore the concept that an ed code allowed last year that would allow the district to substitute or add a technology education class, career technology class, to count towards graduation. And it would use one of the VAP that may be necessary at this point.
I think, and I'd like to hear from the high school principals about that as well before taking any action on that one. Okay.
Then I had one other thought. I keep coming across the term Common Core Standards, I would like either in the Friday memo or possibly as an agenda item an approach that would bring us, or bring me at least, up to snuff on the Common Core Standards and their effect on the district and the budget and the teaching in some just comprehensive way.
Yeah, I would benefit from that as well.
Okay, so we have two people, so we'll bring that back. I don't know, how do we want to handle that? Is that a Friday packet? It seems like that's going to be a pretty extensive discussion.
Well, maybe I could front load the board on Friday notes,
right,
with a brief summary of what it is and where you can explore additional info, and then we can agendize it at a later time if you so wish.
Okay. Yeah. I see we have consensus on that.
Okay.
Okay. Is there anybody else, Mr. Quisenberry? You got your light on.
Oh.
Okay. Let's move on to item 12.01 then, reports by board members. Does anybody have anything they'd like to report? Mr. Quisenberry.
That's why I had my light on. No, I just wanted to mention that I did, last week I had a chance to talk with some of the Monarch Grove Elementary teachers about the challenge that they're facing this year with the implementation of many of our initiatives. It was an interesting discussion. It was a very brief discussion, so I need to visit some other sites and get some other input, but it was certainly worth going there and talking to a few of the folks there. Also had a chance, along with Mrs. Roger, to attend the sixth grade transition meeting today, and I just wanted to commend the teachers and the staff there at the high level of discussion, of sharing ideas, honoring people's opinions and input, and I thought it was, for me, it was very encouraging to see their enthusiasm and their desire to make any kind of decision that in that direction to work well for all the students and their parents and families.
Anybody else? I'll just say then I, along with Mrs. Roger and Mr. Millar, went to the county committee meeting on the transfers. I was disappointed, I think would be fair to say, in the outcome of it. And I agree with you, Dr. Prater, that I think that this decision was not in the best interest of the students of Cayucas. And I'll be interested to see what happens next and what the next steps are. And I want to echo the people, I think, who would say that we are one Estero Bay community. And I for one, would welcome the students from Cayucas into Morro Bay High School. I think it would do nothing but enrich what's going on at that school. Also, I was able to go to the Los Osos Middle School presentation last night at Del Mar, and it was very interesting. There were about 50 people there. Lots of great questions. I really want to give kudos to Dr. Pruitt, I thought he did a great job answering the questions. Mr. Bloom took down, I don't know, probably 17 questions, wouldn't you say, Rick? Mr. Robinette was there. Just lots of interesting stuff, lots of things for them to look for. And I know that I think Mr. Quisenberry and Marilyn are going to try to go to the other ones this week, so I think it's going to be real interesting for you guys. And just a reminder that there's the Del Mar Carnival on Sunday, so we'd invite everybody to come out to it.
The Bishop's Peak Carnival
Friday night. And Ellen says the Bishop Peak Carnival is Friday night. Anything else? Okay. On that note, we are adjourned until next Tuesday, the 23rd, where we'll do a study session at 6 o'clock on our expulsion procedures. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.